T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
With the 5 o'clock fire.
Congratulations. It's 5 o'clock, and many of you are off work. Luckily for you, Wade and Show have the latest for you. Wade Smith, 12-year NFL vet, former Pro Bowler, former Houston Texan, is in. Clint is nursing a sore throat and trying to get his voice back. And hopefully he's getting closer to being ready to go. But the latest here is with the Astros, a team that's rolling pretty well. They had one of those emotional victories last night. They were down to their last out, their last strike before Mr. Los, Mr. She Knows came through.
She Knows.
With the game-tying home run, and then Jose Altuve hit a grand slam to end the game. But today, they have to add another person to the IL, and that is Kyle Tucker. Kyle Tucker, who is starting to come on. He is number seven in that top seven in the lineup, and he had been hitting well, leads this team. Check this up. I feel like I'm right. He still leads this team in home runs and RBIs, although Los may have climbed towards him, but he had been leading this team in home runs and RBIs and swinging the bat better over the last couple of weeks. He goes to the IL, and he goes in the health and safety protocols. So we'll see what that means. And Abraham Toro has been recalled from Sugar Land to be on the team, Wade. But Kyle Tucker, kind of a big loss for the Astros.
Right? Yeah, when you look at the Astros lineup, they go seven deep with guys, and starting to be 8 and 9 with some of the other guys that are starting to hit better as well. But they got seven guys on that roster that, including Kyle Tucker, that you say, man, you really can't pitch around them. And so, you know, you lose them out of the lineup. In the grand scheme of things, it's really not going to affect the bottom line, I don't think, because they have so many talented guys at the plate. But at the same time, you want to be full go if you can help it. And they've had various players, key members of the team, that have been in and out of the lineup. And you were hoping to get all seven of those guys that arguably should be top six in the lineup at the plate together and go on a string of ball games. And it's not going to happen. Hopefully it just, you know, it only is isolated to Kyle Tucker. And he's the only guy that you got to worry about. But most of the guys on the team are vaccinated, and hopefully it doesn't affect them that way. But like we talked about in the last segment, I guess if you catch it, even if you are vaccinated, you still got to be, you know, separated from the group. And so hopefully Kyle Tucker doesn't miss that many games and it doesn't spread around like it did earlier in the year where it was a big problem and the Astros started off slow. And, you know, Abraham Toro, I know your favorite Astro.
Love him.
Will come in. And
Dusty's favorite.
And, I mean, no, that's your favorite guy, man. I think you and Toro are besties. And hopefully he'll come in from Sugar Land. He'll come up 59, and he'll give the Astros something. Just give him something. You don't need to be great. Just give him something.
Hopefully he doesn't play. It's tough because Diaz is also on the IL, and that would probably be somebody you would look to stick out in the outfield to replace him. So that's where that comes about as a bit of an issue. You would feel much better with his bat. Let me know, Tyler, when those lineups come out. I'd like to see who Dusty is going with, because this is wild card Dusty time. You don't know who he's going to go with. Maybe Tyler Jones. That's what Taylor Jones, excuse me. Maybe that's
the lineups are out.
Oh,
what do you want to know?
Who is replacing Kyle Tucker? Who is in the outfield?
Oh, McCormick's playing the outfield, so I believe. Let me double check.
McCormick and
Brantley's DHing.
Oh, okay.
Jordan and left.
Okay, Yordan's in left. McCormick and then Straw in there. See, on the I think that's the part about it that's most important. Let's see, if there's any contact tracing or anything like that to where anybody else is affected that may have to miss time like happened earlier. But the other big part to me is, like, who's arguably been your hottest hitter here of late? Michael Brantley started going crazy when he got in that two spot again. Mm-hmm. But the person who he replaced in the two spot, Carlos Correa, is smoking hot for about a month now, it feels like. Now you start to think about who's behind him. And I don't know what the Rangers were thinking yesterday with even giving him anything to pitch. But behind him now, you're going to be looking at McCormick, Straw, and Maldonado behind him. And, I mean, really changed the pitches as he was seeing.
Yeah, his opportunities are going to drastically reduce because he doesn't have Tucker sitting right behind him that you can't pitch around to him to get to.
So, yeah, that'll be an interesting thing. But Kyle Tucker out on the IL. He joins guys like Diaz, who I think would be a great replacement for him, but he's on the IL as well. Abraham Toro called up for the Astros from Sugar Land.
5 o'clock fire.
All right, Tua Tagovailoa had himself a rough practice yesterday. He had five interceptions thrown, and it's become a big deal. Now, for here in Houston, it's become a big deal because some people feel like, hey, this could push the Dolphins in a space of maybe wanting to make a move with Tua. But many other people are now having questions and concerns about Tua. I didn't think it was a big deal at all, and now I feel even better about it after hearing Tua give an explanation of what they were working on.
Well, I think today, the emphasis for us quarterbacks, we wanted to be aggressive today within the pass game. We wanted to see if we could fit throws in. We wanted to see, you know, what throws we could make, under these conditions. And we're just trying to push the ball vertical down the field. You know, there's some plays that didn't go our way, but, you know, there's things that we got to fix here within the next couple hours to look over film and correct for tomorrow.
Yeah, this is not a big deal to me. They're in mini camp. And as he said, I thought this was the case. One, it was pouring down, raining in a major way. But sometimes they work on things. And I will never forget Kurt Warner saying this about it was a young quarterback several years ago that everyone was touting. Hey, he didn't throw any interceptions. He didn't throw any interceptions. He hadn't thrown any interceptions in several weeks at training camp. And Kurt Warner said, That's where you should be trying things. That's where you should be experimenting and seeing what you can get away with and what you can't. That's not necessarily a great thing. And being what Tua was last year, making Alex Smith look like Brett Favre in terms of aggressiveness, maybe he could stand to be a little aggressive and take some chances. So this was not a big deal to me.
I tell you what, I think it's a byproduct of a lot of people trying to read the tea leaves with a lot of things that have been said and from multiple angles. The Kareem Jackson comments from talking about Deshaun Watson wanting to go to Denver. The comment of Nick Caserio talking about a decision being made on Deshaun Watson before training camp, whether you want to read into that or not. The fact that, you know, Derek Carr comes out and he's talking about how if he gets traded away from the Raiders that he's going to retire. You have Aaron Rodgers is a guy that wants out, and Deshaun Watson is a guy that wants out of the franchises. And both of them, if they are traded, they would improve whatever roster you go to. And then Miami Dolphins all along has been a team that people thought would be an excellent trade partner for the Houston Texans. The relationship between both franchises, they've done deals in the past, so you have that there. The Miami Dolphins have all the assets you would need to make a trade for Deshaun Watson, so a lot of it makes sense. And if Tua is not the guy, and he hasn't shown that he's the guy, this is going to raise some eyebrows when you see him struggling and throwing five interceptions in one practice. So we add all those factors together, I think that's people saying, you know, hey, well, maybe there's something there. Maybe something's going to go down before training camp, because I think the Miami Dolphins would want to make the trade for Deshaun Watson before training camp. Same with the Denver Broncos, same with the Raiders. People want to win this year. People want to win now. And so it'll be interesting to see if a move is made. We don't know what's going to go on with the settling of the legal matters with Deshaun Watson, and There has been no ruling coming down from the NFL yet. So, but I think it stems from that. But at the end of the day, Tua having one bad practice is not the difference maker. At the end of the day, the Miami Dolphins want Deshaun Watson as their quarterback, whether Tua has a bad day or not.
No, that yesterday didn't change that thought.
5 o'clock fire.
All right, I have been enjoying the NBA playoffs. It's becoming harder because every single player that's worth a damn star players are going down left and right and changing the outcomes of series. And the latest two big ones today, Phoenix Suns, former Houston Rocket, All-NBA guard Chris Paul has entered the COVID-19 health and safety protocols and is sidelined for an indefinite period of time. Luckily for them, they are through to the Western Conference Finals after sweeping the Nuggets. They're awaiting the winner of Utah and the Clippers. And that series has taken a turn due to injury. And this is the second injury for Chris Paul. But now Kawhi Leonard has suffered an ACL injury, the All-NBA guard for the Clippers, and he is out indefinitely. He is definitely not playing tonight in game five, which is a huge, huge game in that series. And this is crazy to go along with all the injuries we've seen in these playoffs from Anthony Davis that changed that series. Joel Embiid has looked rough and had injuries, and just so many injuries to top level players.
James Harden, Kyrie Irving,
the Nets are screwed. Yeah, it's just insane what's happening.
Yeah, when you look at it, I think this is a result of the bubble. It's a result of the
LeBron
COVID year.
LeBron thinks that.
It makes a lot of sense. They've played a significant amount of games in a short amount of time, and it's tough. Because you want to get the games in, you want to be able to generate revenue, you want to give the fans what they want, but you know, a person's body can only take a certain amount of wear and tear before it breaks down, and I think that's what you're seeing with a lot of these guys. Most of the superstars are the ones that are playing, you know, 40 minutes plus a game. Like that's what you see, and so the more games they play in a short amount of time, the more likely they're going to have injuries, and you're seeing a lot of superstars having to deal with that over this playoffs, and hopefully Chris Paul can get back in time before it makes a difference either way. You want to see him actually have opportunity to play and win a series or lose it, because he's had times in the past where he's played and they lost because his team didn't play well enough, and that's one thing. But the last couple of years he's had opportunities, legit chances to win a championship. In Houston he had a hamstring. Now with the Suns, He might mess around and miss some significant time because of the COVID protocols. That would be unfortunate for him, and it'd be unfortunate for the game of basketball because the Phoenix Suns are the best team in the West right now.
5 o'clock fire.
Staying with the NBA and out of the playoffs, not in the Western Conference, Stan Van Gundy, he is out after one season with the New Orleans Pelicans. I never thought that was going to work. That never seemed like a match.
Yeah.
On the surface, you get a star like Zion, and Brandon Ingram's pretty good, and then Lonzo Ball. I'm not sure with him, but they've got some pieces, and they got a lot of picks still from the Anthony Davis trade with the Lakers. That on the surface, when you look at it, feels like a destination place for a coach. I think Jason Kidd, somebody who's going to have a lot of options, but when you really look at it, is it? Is getting Zion and the Pelicans a spot if you're a coach, you're like, yeah, I want to go there?
I like the talent that Zion brings to the table, but his physical health just concerns me because every time he goes up and yams on somebody, I fear him landing. Like, I don't know about how consistent of a player he's going to be over the long haul, because when you're such a physical freak, a lot of times bodies aren't meant to be that way, and they wear down quicker and they're in and out of the lineup. And so if you're a coach coming in and if you have Zion on your team, you got to build around him. I don't know if that's the place that I kind of feel secure of. This is what I'm going to get out of my superstar player. I'm going to get 75 games, you know, 80 games out of this guy a year because he's a durable player. And I don't know if he's ever going to be able to prove that up, because I haven't really seen him be that guy that's, you know, out there day in and day out. And maybe it's because I've seen him get hurt in the past that I have that feeling like, man, I want to see him be his best, but he's hurt. I don't know about New Orleans, man, and I don't know about Jason Kidd going there. I don't know about it being a destination franchise.
All right. Listen, David Culley spoke with the guys on Texans All Access, and there was one comment that kind of threw Wade Smith off. We'll discuss that coming up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the Show.
Clint is out today, resting his sore throat, getting those vocal cords back to normal, hopefully, so rest well. But in for him today, the 12-year NFL vet, former Houston Texan, former Pro Bowler Wade Smith, is in the building. Had a lot of fun today, and we're going to close this thing out right. We heard Texans All Access, which follows us. David Culley was on the other day, and there were some things that kind of jumped out to you that just threw you off a bit, and I'm not going to lie, it threw me off a bit as well. But this was David Culley kind of discussing his experience at OTAs as the head coach for the first time.
I was all over the place. And I'm going to tell you, the reason I was all over the place is that because this is an excellent coaching staff. And it was basically a learning experience for me, because I found myself a couple of times in practice, like you said, I was all over the place. Then all of a sudden, I've been every place. Now I'm saying, now where do I go? What do I do? You know, I've learned that basically I'm the head coach. It has been a great experience for me being able to see the big picture. You know, being a head coach, that's a pretty good gig, being able to see everybody do those things in practice now.
All right, when you hear that, when you hear him talking about, you know, almost seeming like they didn't know where he was going to go and all of that, what is the thing that really jumped out to you?
He was very candid, and I think he did not keep in mind or realize that by putting it the way he put it and being just completely honest, that people would look at that and say, well, if you didn't know what was going on, then what the hell are you doing out there? You know what I mean? There could be coaches in the past, and because I've never heard a head coach put it that way, that, hey, I have to remember that I've heard coaches say I have to remember I'm the head coach, but the way he put it, it sounded almost like, you know, I'm trying to figure out the best way to put it. Like, it sounded like, wow, I'm actually a head coach in the NFL. What do I do next? Type of deal. Like, you're kind of in over your head. Whereas I'm sure there's been coaches in the past that felt like they were in over their head, but they would never let it be known to the public. Yeah. That's how they were feeling.
Because that could be perceived that way.
Because it's going to be perceived that way by a lot of people. At the same time, I don't think that part of it bothers him one bit. He doesn't strike me as a guy that has an ego at all. And so
I would agree.
He's not going to care that someone might look at him as less than because he was candid about how he was feeling out there on the field. He strikes me as a guy that's just genuine and honest, and in some respects, that's going to be great for him. In some respects, it's going to be held against him. I've just never been around a head coach that did not know from period to period where he wanted to go, what he wanted emphasized. Like, the head coach of a franchise, of an NFL team, they have the vision, and they have a lot of people around them that they delegate to bring that vision to life. But if you have a vision on something, you know where I'm going to go next. You know what period, what drill I want to go to next. There's not going to be idle time because you've already got it planned out before you even step on the practice field. Like I coach youth football, right? I'm the defensive coordinator for my team. Like my emphasis is the outside linebackers, right? We working on setting the edge and doing those type of things, tackling drills or whatever. But if my defensive line is struggling with something, working on splitting double teams, or if my DBs are not, you know, getting lined up correctly or recognizing personnel packages when they get out on the field, at practice, I'm going to work that in. Like, hey, I'm going to make sure I need to go over there with the DBs for a little bit, make sure that their footwork is correct. I'm going to go check out the defensive linemen. You know, it's going to be very regimented, and I'm going to know what I'm going to do from period to period. And so to hear that, it's kind of like, he might not be the one that's actually putting these practices together. Maybe it's somebody else that's putting the practice together, or he's just telling his coaches, hey, you guys, whatever you need to get done, get it done, and I'm just going to be here to support you.
As Wade and I were reacting to David Culley, kind of an experience, telling experience in OTAs of being a head coach, and seemed to like not know where I'm heading next, not where I'm doing all those things. And see, the thing that makes me really nervous about this is what was an issue that I was wondering when he got the job is, like, I wonder how players are going to view him and how they're going to look at him in terms of their belief in him as a head coach. And to me, I feel like that's a big deal, too, is what is their belief as a head coach. And when you hear this in a presser, but really when you see it on the field and you can see, like, who's putting this together? Did he put this together? He's confused. Like, is there a method to what he's doing? I would wonder, is there an effect to players looking at this and potentially having a negative effect of their belief in him as their head coach?
I think if players are perceiving it the way that it's sounding, the way he's putting it out there, and that's the actual situation to where, hey, like, he's not putting the practices together, I think players are going to look at it and say, okay, what we're doing out here right now, does it make sense? Is this practice feel normal to me as far as what we're effectively doing on the field? Because if that part is in line, then it's not going to matter to them who actually put the practice together. If it's Nick Caserio doing it, if it's the coordinators doing it, if it's Lovey and Tim Kelly or Pep Hamilton, whoever it is, if the drills I'm doing I feel like are effective and getting me better, then I don't think matters. I think when you look at, you know, David Culley, if he's the same guy every day, if he's having that energy and he's being positive, guys are going to say, okay, this is David Culley. This is how he approaches things. All right, cool. As long as you don't switch up,
yeah,
and try to be something you're not, then players are going to be, they're going to understand what you bring to the table, what value you bring to the table. They're going to respect it, and they're going to go out there and try to do their job. The problem comes is down the line, and maybe not even in year one, but year two, year three, if there's a lot of positivity and great effort and good energy and all of those type of things, but it's not translating to wins on the field, and guys feel like part of the reason why is because of leadership, then you're gonna see the stepping away, the stepping back, the guys are feeling some type of way about what's going on. So time will tell on that. But I think in this year one, there's a lot of guys that are excited about what's going on over there in the NRG. They know that a lot of people are not expecting them to do much. And so anytime you have that mentality, just that bunker mentality, it's like, hey, we're going to go out here and do it for one another. We're going to go out there and ball. And so I think they're going to have the right attitude approaching everything. Now, what's going to determine do they win games or not is the players and decisions that are made on game day by David Culley is when it comes to clock management and stuff like that. Those things, that won't change. Like, players are going to win games, and I kind of look at it like this. Players win games and coaches lose them. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that kind of agree with that line of thinking. Like, a coach can put you in a position to succeed, but the players ought to actually go out there and do it. And if you're not put in a position to succeed, then it's hard for me to put a lot of blame on the players. And so that's why that's where that kind of sentiment comes from.
Well, Wade, you say this a lot, like, hey, the Texans are my team. You're a Houston Texan, forever Texan, always a Texan. Does this concern you? The thought that he is not traditionally, I know you've had eight coaches, head coaches.
Yeah.
Like, you've never had any question or wonder if they knew where they were going in a practice that they put together. Does this concern you?
My expectations are not high on what's going to happen this year when you're talking about wins and losses. What I want out of this season is, are the young guys that were on the team last year getting better? Are the young guys that they brought into the team getting better? Are they improving? You need players to win games. And right now, the Texans don't have those players that you normally need on a team to win a significant amount of ball games. They're rebuilding. They're starting from scratch. And so my expectations for them are not that high. So my concern level with the approach that they're taking is not as high as it would be if they did have a team that was ready-made to go for it. Because this is something that is different. This is not a conventional approach. Because Mike Tomlin, you would never hear him say what David Culley said. Because the whole idea of a coach that is not a position coach, that's a head coach, that is like a CEO, that just, you know, basically oversees everything, has the vision, and makes puts people in position to put into place and achieve it. That's normal in the NFL. There's a lot of head coaches like that, but they wouldn't have this same type of verbiage coming out of their mouths talking about practice. You know, they're going to have a vision of how things are going to go. It's going to be regimented. And so that part of it is I could see where it could be concerning.
I'm a bit surprised that you're not concerned. I want to revisit this on the other side, because there's one major thing of why I'm surprised you're not concerned, because I think this could be an issue with that. And I think I learned something watching that Astros game last night that finally makes sense to one of the most controversial things with the Astros. We discuss all that next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Clint Sterner and the show.
Long fly ball, deep right field. Correa has tied it up. Carlos Correa, a two strike, two out, home run, bottom of the ninth to keep the Astros alive.
That's right, Carlos Correa, huge last night. I did learn something with Carlos Correa, and we will get to that in just a second. But I did want to refinish what we were just talking about, because I was surprised when you said, hey, I'm not really concerned about how things are going with David Culley, just because, you know, of the direction of what this season is going to be. You don't have high expectations for this season. My thought was, well, what about the young players? Because what this season to me is about is, all right, what young cats do we have here that are potentially going to be, you know, I don't want to say foundation pieces, because I know Nick Caserio doesn't like to talk about foundation pieces, but guys that are going to be here when the Texans could be competitive again.
Right.
The younger guys, the guys like Ross Blacklock, the guys like Nico Collins, the guys like Lonnie Johnson, perhaps. Is there no concern that the head coach not really taking control like that, feeling that way? There's no concern that young players may not get the growth that they would normally get?
Well, I look at it like this. You look at the young players, they're being coached by position coaches first and foremost. And every position coach that I've heard talk in the media over the past couple of weeks have talked about finding places and roles for guys that have that put them in the place of their best position that utilizes their strengths to the best of their ability and gets the best out of the players. So that philosophy, I think, works very, very well for young players. So although David Culley might not be hands-on on putting the practice together, or he's inexperienced as a head coach, all of those things, that doesn't translate necessarily, and it really doesn't translate to the players that are younger that are – I hear the emphasis is on fundamentals. Like, we want to be a fundamental football team. Those are good things to be learning when you're trying to make your way in the NFL. I'm going to put you in the best position for you to succeed as a player. Those are things that you want, yeah, as a young football player. The position coaches on this team are some really good position coaches. So that's what you want as a young coach, young player on the team. So in that regard, I don't think it hurts the young players at all. I think it could pay dividends for them in the long run, because they're in a situation to where the coaches are trying to find what's best for them, as opposed to the way it was in the past and where it is in other places, where we're trying to see how versatile you can be and we can put you in all these multiple roles. Like, hey, if you're a starter on this team, and some of the young guys are going to be expected to be starters. If you're a starter on this team, then you're going to play X, Y, or Z. You're not going to have to play X, Y, and Z. Yeah. You know, you might have the ability to do so in a pinch, but let's not focus on that. And so I think the young players are going to be able to learn and progress based off of just the overall philosophy and what's going on with the team.
Is that your experience, your 12-year career, that you got more effect from your position coach, your offensive line coach, than the effect of head coaches in terms of your growth and development?
You got to understand, everything trickles downhill. And whoever is the decision maker, is it the GM? In this case, I think what it is it the head coach? There's somebody that's setting the vision for the team. And everything is going to trickle down from there. And so you're going to get better as a player based off of what that overall vision is. I agree with the vision of what the Texans are trying to do as far as their philosophy of how they're going to get the best out of their individual players and how they're all about the team and being unselfish and all those type of things. I agree with those philosophies. So it's unconventional for you to have a head coach that is, you know, talking about how he had to remember he's the head coach and he didn't know what to do after a certain period and how excited he got after off of watching special teams. That's unconventional. I've never heard a head coach talk in that way. But the overall philosophy, those are things that are going to translate to the players on the team, especially the young ones. You want to be put in a position to where you can succeed as a player. And they're fully vested in trying to develop guys. You go to some places, young guys getting developed is not necessarily the number one priority.
Yeah.
Hey, we're trying to figure out ways to win this game.
The Texans were last year.
Right. The young guys are just, hey, they're an afterthought in a lot of regards. They're trying to figure out how to win now because we need to win now. I don't think that's the timeline of the Texans. And so I think it could benefit a lot of the players. Now, is that going to translate to wins? This year, I don't think so. Like, I look at it realistically. That's not going to translate. It might win them a game or two that they otherwise might have not won. And because, I think going into this game, Vegas says they're going to lose every game. Yeah. So if they win four or five games, they might have won those four or five games because of the David Culley, Houston Texan, Nick Caserio approach. Because according to Vegas, they're not supposed to win a game.
They're not favored in one.
Not a single game. So I do believe they're going to win, I would say four or five games. That's what I would expect out of the Texans, and a lot of people don't expect that. So that's above and beyond what a lot of people on the outside
You expect four or five games? They won four last year.
Two totally different scenarios.
Okay,
I mean, the bottom line number is the same, but how they get to the four is two totally different things.
Because I think people hear, like, you feel pretty good. You said four or five, and I know it's a 17-game season.
Right.
And you just hear no Deshaun, and you replace that with Tyrod Taylor. J.J.'s out.
Right.
J.J.'s out.
You can win football games by running the football and not turning it over and playing decent defense. You can win football games like that. The Texans could not do those things last year. They could not run the football. They couldn't play decent defense. And they turned the ball over, not a bunch, but I don't think they're going to turn the ball over. Like, Deshaun, I only think he had, 12, 11 interceptions. Like, he had a really good number.
I don't think
number.
He had that many.
He had, like, a bunch of touchdowns. It was a very low number. So the turnover part probably is going to be similar as it was last year. But running the football, that's going to change. They're going to get better. So
no,
even,
I agree.
Though,
I think
even though the players, the overall player talent level has dropped, the way and the style of football they're going to play is going to translate to some wins that they otherwise would not have gotten.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I feel like the overall talent level is probably the same. I wouldn't say the same because Deshaun is a huge, huge part of that. But I think the offensive line talent-wise is a lot better. I think the defensive line talent-wise, I mean, you lose J.J., but talent-wise you feel better. I think the linebacking core, you feel better overall talent-wise. And I think you can't overestimate, maybe you disagree, that there is a big step in the overall coaching staff with this crew now. Just a much bigger step overall. Maybe not. You mean you?
And it might not be coach by coach. It's the philosophy of what they're trying to implement. I think the Texans this year will do a better job of getting the most out of the guys that they do have. I think the Texans in years past did a terrible job of getting the most out of the guys they had. Duke Johnson comes to mind. Jeff Allen comes to mind. Zach Fulton comes to mind. There's a lot of guys that came here that were talented football players, and you thought you could be very productive with them, but they weren't utilized correctly. So it doesn't matter how talented you are if you don't use the guys right. I think the Texans this year, just based off of what I've heard so far, their approach, I think they're going to do a better job of getting more out of the guys that they do have, and that's going to translate to a very similar record to what they had last year.
From the text line, who the hell are they going to beat, Wade? Lord have mercy.
I'd have to look up the schedule. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they have four or five games.
I mean, they got two against the Jags. They got the Jets. They got the Panthers. Three of the four of those are at home.
I mean, find the teams that struggle stopping the run. Those are the teams they're going to have a chance to beat. You know, find me a team that turns the ball over. That's the team they're going to have a chance to beat. It's not necessarily because we don't know what each one of these teams are going to be like. We can guess going into it, but it's about matchups. If I run the ball well and you can't stop the run, I got a chance to beat you. If you turn the ball over a bunch and I don't turn the ball over, I got a chance to beat you, despite how much talent we got on the roster. Yeah.
Clint Sterner and the show here with you. Clint is out today. Wade Smith, 12-year NFL vet, is in. And Wade, last night, I feel like I learned something watching that Astros game. And I want to talk to many of you who are on this bandwagon. I don't know why you all have a give-up factor on Carlos Correa. I don't know what he's done. He's only was the overall number one pick and has been pretty much what any franchise would dream their number one overall pick would be, to play an important position. And when his contract and free agency comes up, that people are willing, multiple teams are willing to pay him $300 million. Yeah, you would want him to be. If you don't believe me, go right now. We'll go a little bit after the show. Use that Odyssey Rewind feature. You can listen to Robert Flores, who was on with us at 3:30. And Robert Flores said, it broke it down in every way. He's clutch. He's a great defensive player.
Excellent.
A guy
elite.
Elite. A guy who
I know you don't like to use that word unless it's
oh, I can give
something.
You, I
elite.
Can give you elite.
It's elite.
Defensively for him, yeah. A guy who's ascending. And he said a guy who is in the top five of those shortstops, mm-hmm, who are getting paid that type of money. I don't know why some of you in Houston are just against him. I don't know why. Don't worry. I will be there for you. Congratulations, by the way. He's going to be a father.
Carlos
Correa. Congratulations, yeah. Baby. He announced on social media
on Instagram. He posted a picture with the sonogram.
He and his bride.
The ultrasound.
Yeah, he and his bride. They're gonna have a baby. So, but what I did learn, I feel like I learned this from last night, is I think there are some hardcore Houston sports fans, especially the ones baseball fans, especially the ones who feel like he's not worth it or he doesn't deserve it. A new contract,
mm-hmm,
from what teams will pay him. I feel like a lot of those have an issue potentially with his swagger, with how he goes about playing the game, his attitude, his, you know, everything that comes with him. And I think it really showed yesterday in how the game played out. His home run that he hit, mm-hmm, to tie the game, I mean, he pimped it like nobody's pimped it all year. I dare to. I mean, Fernando Tatis has pimped a few. But my man, he did not hit the first base bag until that ball landed. He was still staring and mugging down his team. Like, I mean,
he would have got a free throw violation in basketball.
Oh, yeah. Giannis-like there from home plate to first.
Yeah.
And then when you watch Jose Altuve, who I would think is probably the current face of this team. He hit his home run to end the game, looked at it for half a second, ran down to first base, high-fived to the first base, coach just ran around. And I feel like a lot of the folks that, and I'm not talking to all Houston fans, I'm talking to the fans who are having out for Carlos. I think many people just appreciate that as their face, as opposed to the swagger base that he is bringing to the table, he being Carlos Correa. And that's what it's learned. Because when you look at the other faces that have been in Houston, you're talking about Bagwell, Biggio, Berkman, Springer, Altuve, Roger Clemens, if you count him with a short period of time, Andy Pettit. Those guys, I'm putting this in quotes, went about it the right way. You hear about that in baseball. Yeah. Went about it the right way. And Los, I could see some fans, God, I wish he just ran around them damn bases. Just run around the bases. Okay, man. Act like you've been there before. And I feel like that's a part of the issue with some of those hardcore Houston sports fans, that's not what they envision to be the face of their team. That's what I feel like I learned.
I hope that's not the case. I hope it has more to do with, you know, some of the transgressions that he was a part of over the past, you know, few years, back to him, you know, breaking the rib and in YouTube videos and all of that type of stuff, to where he didn't seem like he was as mature of a player as you would have wanted. But over the past few years, that's changed, man. Like, the way he stepped up after the cheating scandal, the way he is with his teammates, he's a leader in the clubhouse. He's a leader in dealing with the media when it comes to defending his franchise.
He was absolutely the best on that.
No question. He plays the game at such a high level. Everything about him strikes you as the face of the franchise. And we had a caller earlier today that said he's the face of the city. When you're talking about superstars in a city that have been depleted of superstars over the past couple of years, Carlos is the guy to take us into the next, you know, the next 10 years or so. Like, I would love to see him stay here. I would love for fans the fans that feel this way to take out the whole idea of, hey, we're not going to pay him that much money. He wants more money than what he's actually worth. He's what the market bears out, and what he's worth to you on the field, in the clubhouse, in clutch situations, you really can't put a number on that. And if Jim Crane has the money and is willing to invest it, be happy that he's willing to do it. Is it going to happen according to Robert Flores and MLB MLB Network? It's not going to happen. I think it'll be unfortunate that you lose him, you lose Springer, you lose Cole back-to-back years.
Three straight years.
But the Astros have done such a damn good job of finding guys where we didn't know that they existed, replenishing the roster. I could understand their sentiment where they feel like they can do it once again. I never liked the idea of drafting a guy, developing him, creating a superstar, and then letting him walk out the building. When all you can do to keep him, you just have to cut a check.
And when you can do it,
you have the ability to cut the check. It's a check. It's not a situation to where if a check is cut for Carlos Correa, then now you cannot pay Bregman, or you can't pay Altuve, or you can't pay Alvarez, you can't re-up on guys that have already gotten paid or whatever like that. Like, I just,
not to mention that you got two guys that are having that get paid $30+ million,
and you're not going to have to pay them because they're older players, and it's time for them to move on.
You got
a guy that's in your prime.
You got an ace that you're not going to have, a potential ace.
Like, Carlos Correa is not as good as he's going to be.
Yeah,
he's not there yet.
He's ascending. Yeah.
He is getting better, and so I just,
and you're not going to have to pay Framber Valdez anything for a while. And the way that he is looking,
you're stealing right now. I mean, such a great job of finding a guy, developing a guy, that you're stealing right now. So the fact that you're, you know, robbing one guy, use that to pay another, and then you can keep the team together, keep the party going.
Do you two think it's fair, though, my assessment of why that minority of people who don't want Carlos is a bit of a thought of, man, if you pay that dude $30+ million, this dude, as you said, the young one ascending.
It might be some PTSD. Hey, Deshaun Watson just got paid, and then all of a sudden he changed, and he's doing this and he's doing that. Maybe they worry about Carlos having that Hollywood factor because he has the agent that's like a bunch of Hollywood celebrities that are they're his client. And so maybe it's something that has to do with that. The way he plays the game and his swagger and stuff like that, if that's the reason why, then that means to me they're going to stop liking baseball, because that's the way that the game is trending.
And I feel like we are getting some people who want their old baseball back, that get annoyed with that and want their old baseball back. I look at that and I'm like, man, I can just the way those two reacted to their home runs.
Yeah.
I thought, oh,
that makes
sense because I couldn't get it. But, there's nothing that you could look at him and say, damn, no, don't pay him. Why? It doesn't make sense. I'm trying to dig deeper, and I get accused of this. You're overreaching.
But Altuve also took a deal that was considered a hometown discount. He's not going to get Correa money right now. He's not getting paid Correa money right now. So maybe that's what it is too. So. Maybe that has some, because once you pay a guy like that, he's got the keys to the kingdom. And maybe that's not the guy you want to have or maybe you don't want anybody to have that much power. Maybe that has to do with it. But to me, the actual, his swag and him, like, everything about that moment was beautiful. I loved everything about it except the fact that he was doing it against my team. But I loved everything else about it.
That's where it started for me. I said, God, I love all this. I love
two strikes.
And then I said, oh.
Last out, two strikes.
There's got to be some baseball fans who don't love this like I love it. Got to be some out there who don't love this like I love it.
Hopefully the fans that are kind of have that, you know, curious, I don't know if mentality, it's, yeah, maybe they can just tolerate it. Maybe it doesn't turn them off. Just get to the point where you can tolerate it, and the people that really enjoy it, it can grow the game and get more people excited about baseball because they need that.
Yeah, congratulations to him. And how about it? How about the toughness of James Harden last night? Woo, man.
Oh, yeah.
That one out. What'd he go, 46 minutes?
Hey, man.
Oh, it's so tough.
Last night.
He's trying to get that ring. Don't mess with Tyler right now.
What were the Bucks thinking? Can someone just put him in an ISO and a pick and roll and make him? He could not move left or right. Some people call that laterally. But he could not move at all. And they just let him just.
What's this potato chips thing, bro? I saw on the Google Doc. What's this?
I'm trying to get out of my fatness, and I'm like, is that fat that I want? That I still want to put potato chips on sandwiches?
No, putting potato chips on sandwiches is a beautiful thing.
And back when I was weird.
When I was in, you thought it was weird?
I've always thought that was weird. I can't get behind the chips on the sandwich.
Come on, bro. When I was a little kid, skinny little kid, chips on a sandwich got me through.
I just want to make. I'm trying to get better on that. Texans All Access coming up behind us. Two guys that I'm sure put chips on their sandwiches, Mark Vandermeer and John Harris behind us. Make sure you stay tuned. Clint, get better. Wade, always fantastic. Tyler, decent job today. I am Ron, the show, and as always, Houston, we love you, baby.
Cheating or no cheating, we're going to tap that ass.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.